Before we start today's show, there is something that I have honestly never thought about happening before. It was not in my realm of things to think about, so bear with me. But today's episode, we have Mandy back, who was a previous guest on our show, telling her story of overcoming trauma. And she introduced me to a gentleman of the name Doug Scott Kramer, who has a YouTube channel and put his heart, soul, and passion into his work. As most of you all know, our show is recorded way in advance. We recorded this episode in the last week of October, and December 17th, we got notification that, unfortunately, Doug Scott Kramer had passed away. Doug was a supporter of our show. We connected immediately and had a great bond. I was going to be a guest on his YouTube channel. Unfortunately, we never got to that part before his passing. So I wanted to open the show by saying that this was a great show. There was a lot of sentiment with it. There's a lot of powerful statements that come from both Mandy and Doug. And I hate that Doug never got to hear the finished product. And I hate that I wasn't a part of his show. But I love the fact that Mandy introduced us and Doug became a friend. At the end of this episode, Mandy will be joining me. We're going to have a few moments of speaking about Doug and remembering Doug. And I would love for anybody that would like to join and listen in on that. I would love that. I would love for people to send us messages on if they follow Doug's YouTube show, Dazed But Not Confused. Doug will definitely be missed. He did great work. He will live on. And this episode was a very powerful episode. So please enjoy the episode and join Mandy and I after to remember Doug Scott Kramer.
Welcome to Surviving Podcast. Today's show is going to be different than we've done before. We've got multiple speakers on to talk about some hot topics right now with Scientology and a particular case that's been in the news. So I am going to let Mandy and Doug introduce themselves.
So my name is Mandy. I was on David's podcast about a year ago where I explained my situation with my ex-husband and how he used the death of our son to keep me in a relationship. And being one of those victims that was gaslighted to stay in said relationship and to believe that it was normal when I told friends about what was going on, I have a very strong opinion when it comes to victims. To shed light on victims, not just male, but also female, that they are both victims of these kind of crimes and that they go highly unreported. And so when this case came into light, I felt it was a huge beacon for those victims that are silently suffering. And so that's why I asked David if we could do this. And that's why I asked my friend Doug, who has a YouTube channel about Scientology and course of groups, if he would also like to come and help talk about this topic. And so I would like to introduce my friend Doug.
Thanks, Mandy. First of all, I really appreciate what you're doing. And I think you're right. It is just because of the coverage that it got. It goes on all the time as behind closed doors, but because of the coverage the Masterson trial got and is what these women, what it took to actually not only get it to court, Scientology adds another element, but you have to survive their fair game tactics. In other words, they put these ladies under constant pressure. Up to and including poisoning pets, we have to say allegedly, but let's just say they operate like a mafia just to get these women to come forward. And the fact that they had to go through two trials, the first one being deadlocked, and they actually got him sitting in prison right now with the possibility of parole in the neighborhood of 20 to 30 years. It is a good topic to jump on. to encourage other people to come forward. So I just want to say thanks for having us on. And I really support what you're talking about. And I'm sorry you went through that. I understand what you're talking about.
Thanks. Doug, did you want to let the listeners know about your YouTube channel and kind of what you talk about on the YouTube channel? That way, if they have any questions, they know where to find you.
Sure. It's called Dazed But Not Confused. And basically, my dad got into Scientology when I was 9 and brought the what I call a mind virus into the rest of the family because it had a profound effect and it spread to all of us. And I just speak out about that experience. And the reason I say I can relate to what you're talking about is because my family was like a cult of one. And then we had Scientology on top of that. So getting out of a coercive relationships is incredibly challenging. And I had a difficult time too, getting my friends and anybody to listen. And that's why it's great having a voice on YouTube, because people not only care, but it's caused a bunch of healing.
I think that those people that follow your channel and follow David's channel, they, you guys both bring a light to things that have been taboo for a long time. So as someone who follows both of you avidly, I would like to thank you both for your platforms and what you do for those who may or may not tell you thank you.
I will post links in the show notes to Mandy's episode, which was a great, powerful episode that had tremendous feedback. And then, of course, links to your YouTube channel. So I'm excited for people to revisit Mandy's story or listen again for the first time if they haven't, and to definitely check you out. So thank you both for being here. Mandy, I'm going to let you take the wheel with this.
It is a rabbit hole that you can go down, and Doug's done a great job covering this. So if you have further questions, I suggest like checking out his YouTube channel, because he's gone down the rabbit hole of all sorts of things with this case. I think I would like to start with just the fact that this just came to light for the mainstream public recently. I want to say in the last like maybe 3 to 4 years, it brought to light, and it came up with the Leah Remini show, because she had one of the young ladies on her show. And so that's where we as a public heard about this, but it started way beforehand. It didn't start when she brought Jane Doe 3 onto her show. And I'm going to refer to them as Jane Doe 1, Jane Doe 2, and Jane Doe 3, because in the court, that's how they were referred to. And I personally don't know them enough to use their names. They're out there, but I choose to just refer to them as Jane Doe 1, 2, and 3. There are other Jane Does. There's a total of 5 that were involved in the case, but 3 of them were brought charges against Danny. There's a Jane Doe 4 that testified in the first trial. And then there was a Jane Doe 5 who testified in the second trial, and they were witnesses. So Jane Doe 3 appeared on Leah Remini, Scientology, and the Aftermath. And that's where we heard about the Danny Masterson thing full force. And a lot of people, it was around the Me Too movement as well. So a lot of people thought it was going to jump on this whole bandwagon of throwing all these people under the bus, because in the media, that's what they were doing. They were like, oh, it's person X in this industry, and it's person Z in this industry. And then it felt like it was Danny Masterson's turn. But that's not the case. Unfortunately, this case started well into the 2000s, especially with these three Jane Does. Jane Doe 3 had been with him for 6 years and had gone to Scientology. Like, you're told as a Scientology, if there's something that happens to you and it's caused by another Scientologist, you go to Scientology to deal with that. You do not involve the outside world. And so she did what she was taught as a Scientologist. And Danny Masterson was a Scientologist. And if this had happened with someone who was not a Scientologist, they would have told her to go to the police. But because they were both Scientologists, and that's all the victims in this case, Jane Doe 1, 2, and 3 were Scientologists. That's why this case is really important. That's why they didn't go to the cops at the beginning. Because in Scientology, you were taught to go to the Scientology authorities and have them handle things. And that's what she did, because they believed that's how you were going to fix things. And all of these women had gone to Scientology authorities believing Scientology would help them in this case. Doug, would you mind telling us, did Scientology help them in these instances?
First of all, that was a really good breakdown. The only thing I would add is that one of the Jane Does did actually go to the police, went against Scientology authority. Everything you said is correct. I can tell you, being a Scientologist for over two decades, you learn policies that are inculcated and indoctrinated into your mind, where we knew damn we do not report other Scientologists in good standing. And so,
what does a Scientologist in good standing mean? Because some people may not understand why Danny Masterson was so important from the outside looking in. What is a Scientologist in good standing?
One of the reasons Danny in particular is important is because Scientology is all about money, narcissism, and celebrities, which go hand in hand. So he's important just by the fact that he's on that 70s show. He's bringing in millions of dollars. And even though his ethics were out quite a bit, according to cult policy, and why he was pushed to the side and maybe not promoted as much in the cult as he could have been used, he's still a celebrity. His whole family are Scientologists. They're what's called whales. So he's important just by the fact that he's a celebrity. They have celebrity centers, Mandy, out here in Los Angeles and Portland, all over the world. What religion, quote unquote, and it's not a religion, it's a destructive cult. What religion has celebrity centers? So that's why he's in good standing. A Scientologist in good standing would be anyone who doesn't have an ethics record that's not being worked on, that's basically showing up, taking courses. A Scientologist not in good standing wouldn't be what they call a suppressive person yet. That's when you're expelled from the church. But they would be somebody that would be on some kind of ethics handling where perhaps temporarily they're removed from the group and they're not in good standing. And then they might have to go through the conditions, give money to the cult, et cetera, to get back in good standing. But if you're a Scientologist and you're on lines, as they call it, i.e. taking courses and stuff, that's a Scientologist in good standing. And then also, just real quick, that one of the Jane Does did go against their policies, which is really hard to do, and did report it to the police around 2003, 2004. So that was 1 year after it happened to her, right? Because I believe it happened in 2003. Do I have that right?
I think you're referring to Jane Doe number one. She had gone to Scientology in 2002 about a sexual assault.
2001.
And then also in 2003. And then also when she, and you're right, she was not happy with the way the church was handling things. She was told by her ethics officer that she needed to have a meeting with Danny. Part of Danny's handling that Doug was referring to was they have to make amends. They have to tell people, basically, I'm sorry, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z to make sure like you're okay with it. Not saying I'm ever going to do this again, but I'm just going to do this to band-aid the situation and move on because that's what I'm supposed to do and I don't really have to mean it. This meeting occurred because Danny Masterson demanded that she go to this meeting, sit across from him, and he would apologize that he'd never do anything like this again. And she was forced by Scientology to attend this meeting where he would hear her tell him in great detail exactly what he had done to her, how it felt. And as she's telling this, because she naively believed like this is going to work, this is what the church is telling me it needs to do. And he and his friend sat across from her and laughed at everything they did.
Can you imagine that? I wouldn't say naively, right? Because she really honestly believed. And if it wasn't a psychopath, because not everybody's a psychopath like Danny, I've been in positions like that where you really would expect the person to apologize and stuff. So him and Danny and Luke Watcham was his buddy who was actually who was at the party and kind of Danny's right-hand man taking care of things. Yeah, can you believe that? She went down there expecting to get an apology and they laughed in her face. And that's part of what compelled her to finally say, F you, Scientology, I'm going to the police, right? Because she wasn't getting any justice there.
During this, I do believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is also where she got a settlement from Danny.
Yes.
As part of his handling, she got a settlement. And that was brought up in court a lot. You were forced to sign this NDA, you promised never to do this, and he gave you money. But it wasn't I felt like it was an insult to her. Like, you just bore your soul. We laughed at it, and here's $20, take a cab home. I'm not saying it's $20, but that's kind of how it
Doesn't matter what it was, though. It was a buy-off. It was to buy her silence. And by the way, that's admission of the fact that he knew that the church knew he was guilty too. The cult knew he was guilty because they'd never pay her $400,000 if he didn't, in fact, do what she was accusing him of doing. There's no way.
And so that's when I think that was like the straw for her. Not only did he make me and the church trust the process, like, this is going to work, it's going to fix him. I think it was her, and correct me if I'm wrong, but if the church had handled him differently and had him stop doing it, she would not have gone to the police.
Exactly, Mandy. He did this to himself. He had so many opportunities, because the cult keeps everything protected from the authorities, to actually genuinely apologize. He would not be sitting in prison right now, and it never would have gotten to court. And these gals later wouldn't have found out that there were others, because she was the only one that thought it was at that time, because they keep everything compartmentalized and away from each other and hush hush. All Danny had to do was apologize. It never would have gone to the police, agree to stop doing it again, and he wouldn't be spending life in fucking prison right now. He's such an idiot. He's so narcissistic the whole way. He had many opportunities to make it right, and he basically pushed himself into there. He should be in prison. Thank God it went down this way, because he should be in prison for what he did. Those are just the two that they convicted. There's 16 that have come forward and probably counting. Those are just the ones that have come forward saying they've been sexually assaulted by him. Probably many more. That's all I want to say.
No, you're totally right. But that's the 16 or 17 that have come forward. Exactly. I believe there are others being pressured by the church not to come forward.
Yeah. And there might be more coming forward too, Mandy. Who knows? As people get more and more bold. That's just the people that actually have the balls to come forward is really small. So it's quite possible. And he was doing this all over the world, by the way, the US, Canada, and overseas, wherever he'd be.
So that's Jane Doe 1. Jane Doe 2, she talked about how she was assaulted by him in 2003. And that she also went to the church to see what could be done about Danny. And obviously nothing happened. So, Doug, when somebody has something happen to them in the church, and it doesn't have to be by another Scientologist, but if you got in a car accident and you broke your leg in the church, how would they, what would they tell you if you got hurt or sick, or if you had something terrible happen to you? What would they tell you? Would they be supportive? Oh my gosh, let us help you. Or what would they?
If it's just a normal everyday affair that doesn't involve a Scientologist, let's say you got in a car accident, you would just handle it like normal people. It's only a problem when it's cult on cult member. Let's say you're a public Scientologist like I was. I would handle my everyday life, car accidents, disputes with other people in a certain way. But if it was a Scientologist, I would not report it. It's a world within a world and a law within a law. But Mandy, to jump off of your question, I handled the outside world differently. If I got in a car accident, I would know, according to cult indoctrination, that there was a suppressive person or an evil person in my life that I would have to go down to the cult and locate and get out of my life, because it said that any accident or illness you ever have, that includes getting the sniffles up to a car accident, it automatically means that somewhere in your life, and they'll find it on that e-meter through thousands of dollars, that somebody's suppressing you. And when you get them out of your life, you will stop having accidents. So there's a whole way that you handle things like that from the indoctrination. But in terms of if you bring them to court or not, as long as it's not a Scientologist, it's handled basically the standard way anybody does. Minus what I just told you.
But would they blame the other person, or would they blame you?
They would mostly blame you, because like I said, if it's an illness or an accident, it's always on you. It might be the suppressive person that you crashed into, and you would have to get rid of him out of your life. And they have all sorts of funky ways, Mandy, where they put you on these soup cans, and they think everything's mind over matter. All illnesses are psychosomatic. So rather than handling things in the real world, you can get really lost in a spacey place, dissociated space in your head, dealing with things with that e-meter and the auditor to understand why you crashed into this person when a normal human would simply trade insurance and be done with it. So there's a whole lot of significance added to almost anything that's normal like an accident that happens in your life that drives you freaking crazy after a while of thinking like that.
So you have something like a minor thing, like a car accident, and it's brought in as your fault. And what did you do? And so when we're talking about something as violating as SA and rape, they're, and please correct me if I'm incorrect, but their view as the church, if I went to someone telling them, their first action would be like, what did you do wrong?
It depends on, because we have Danny as a celebrity Scientologist, and okay, I won't say the name, but Jane Doe number three, for example, was in a relationship with Masterson. So since she wasn't a celebrity as big as Danny, and she was just up and coming and modeling and acting, Danny's the one with the money. He's the upstat, as which they call it in Scientology. These are thought terminating cliches, Orwellian words to limit thinking. So they have all sorts of terms like that. So to keep it simple, you can figure out what that means. Danny's upstat, his statistics are up, and Jane Doe number three is downstat. So automatically, if anything happens up to and including rape, it's going to be looked at as her fault, probably not Danny's. So one could equally ask, the question is, what did you do to pull it in, Jane Doe number three? In other words, if this happened to you, you must have done something either in this lifetime or in many or in past lifetimes, which they'll find on that soup can machine, as to what you did to cause in this lifetime to pull in that situation. You could ask equally the same, Danny, what did you do to pull this in? But since he's the upstat and she's the downstat, they're going to go after her first. Danny's the more valuable asset and brings in the more money. Who gives a crap what happened to Jane Doe 3? And they did put her through auditing sessions and ethics conditions to locate what she did, probably in past lives, to cause Danny to rape her. Sick, right? But that's how they beat you down. And I believe in that philosophy for a good portion of my life. And it seems very convincing. And you can imagine what that does to your self-esteem. And it also allows the abuser to get away, because as long as they can beat you down and make it your fault. I mean, Mandy, the gaslighting that these girls had to survive, they were in Scientology, all three of them. Just to understand that they were abused and come to terms with that, Jane Doe number, I won't say the number now because I just accidentally said her name, but it is out there, like Mandy said, but I don't want to throw it out there if not need be. She had to have her mate, let's say, get her to understand years later that she even recognized that she had been raped, such as the gaslighting of not only the activity itself, but you add the cult gaslighting on top of that. It can take you forever just to figure that out, just to survive getting out of Scientology, and then to have the fortitude to go to take it to trial, withstand all the alleged fair gaming, the mafia acts to shut them down, two trials. That's why, by the way, part of why, not only Scientology you take it to first, but this explains why it took them so many years, two of the Jane Does, to come forward later in 2016 when it happened to them much earlier, just because of the very things we're talking about, the world within a world within Scientology's law, and the understanding of the tremendous amount of gaslighting to even accept that you were violated, because it's always their fault.
Yep.
It seems like the victim blaming is just
extreme.
But I'm also, where I keep spinning around is this $400,000 that he had to give to, was it Jane Doe 3?
One.
Okay. Yeah. But I just keep thinking, like, of course they're like, oh, give her $400,000 because this makes it right. But then the cult gets to come in and take that $400,000 for her to repent, or whatever word it is, for all the things that she did wrong for this to happen to begin with. So they got the $400,000, not her.
I didn't even think of that, actually. You're absolutely right. They got a good portion of that just going past life to find out what she did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they would be thinking that way. Wow. Yep. Holy shit.
I also, with Jane Doe 2, wasn't she the one, Doug, that had the daughter that Danny Masterson had in the park, met in the park?
I don't know which Jane Doe that is. I know it's not number 3. I thought it might be 1, but you probably know better than I do. Is it 2? I know what incident you're talking about.
So there was an incident, and we'll just say a Jane Doe. I think it's 2, but I could be incorrect. Her daughter was in a park with other children playing. Danny Masterson was on one side, the girl was on the other. And there's this little boy selling candy bars. And, and their class, health classes, sell candy bars. Anyway, Danny Masterson pulled this little boy away and he said, I'm going to buy all of your candy bars. You need to go and tell this little girl something to tell her mom. So he tells this little boy to tell this girl, and this girl goes to her mom and says, hey, so-and-so said he didn't rape you. What is that? And then Danny goes and gives money on account so this girl can get Scientology counseling because she doesn't understand what the R word is. I was like, what the hell? So you just like voluntarily traumatized a small child to let this girl know that your mom's lying. I didn't rape her. And you're involving children in your, for what? Oh, to show that how big of a dick swinger you are? Like,
to show how big of a sick he is. Only somebody sick would do that. Did you understand that, David, what she explained in audience? Danny bought all the chocolate bars of this 9-year-old boy, or I don't know how old the boy was, to go over and tell the daughter of one of the Jane Does that was accusing him of rape, that tell for that little girl to go home and tell Jane Doe, tell her that Danny Masterson did not rape you. And then when the Jane Doe freaked out, this is reminding me of like Fatal Attraction, like that's some psychopathic shit. She says, mommy, what does rape mean? And because obviously it traumatized both of them, the mother and the daughter, Danny then, to make up for it, paid for an auditing package for the 9-year-old girl who didn't know what the word rape was to get fixed for the trauma that he just inflicted upon them.
Through the church.
Yes. It's just a cycle and ever repeating feedback loop of insanity, where it just makes everybody gaslit and wrong, and there's no justice served, and it actually drives you crazy after a while, which is the point of Scientology.
Yep. To add a little bit more for Jane Doe 3, when she went to Scientology, because we had said that she had been in a relationship with Danny for 6 years, when she went to the Scientology authorities about incidents that had happened, her ethics officer told her that she could not be raped because it was his boyfriend. Like, they were in a relationship. You can't be raped in a relationship. She also said that it was her job to give him what he wanted and when he wanted, and that no crimes were committed because they were in a relationship. She later went to authorities in 2016. So you have all this, all of these things that had happened, and going to authorities that were police officers and not getting the respect that you wish you could have gotten. If you had that by a church and people surrounding you, how would that make you feel? It's not just the organization, but having a family, having your family as part of that organization would have that right. same thought pattern.
Right.
So it's not just like right. your priest or your whoever you have as spiritual support, but your family has that same way of thinking that yeah. it's your fault, that you did something wrong, that you need to go and repent or go to ethics or however you approve or have that as your terminology to find out what's wrong with you, because you as a person did something wrong and you deserve what happened to you. And that is mind-blowing as an organization to have brainwashing and that level of abuse to finally come forward and to tell their story. And they went to trial in 2022, about a year ago, the first trial of Danny Masterson came, and there was drama with that as well. They had a Jane Doe 4, as I had mentioned before, who was a witness of what happened. Danny Masterson never took the stand and never called any witnesses for the first trial. He also didn't do it for the second trial, but for the first trial, he didn't call any witnesses. There were two key elements that were kept out of the first trial. The first one was Scientology, the fact that these women had brought these allegations to their clergy people and that it was reported and that they were told, you cannot report it to the police. We will handle it. The second one was the way that he performed SA. And I'm not talking about the act. I'm talking about the violence and the drugging. That was not an issue. They went into the trial thinking, the jury, thinking that these women had not done anything for over 10 years and just all of a sudden showed up.
Yeah.
And that they could have fought back, they just chose not to. So having those two elements not as part of the case didn't really give the full picture. And it was during the first trial, towards the end, that the defense kind of messed up and had questioning about Church, the Scientology, and also brought in the drugging aspect. So when they went to the second trial, because the defense had opened that door, Judge Almeida, who is honestly deserves an award for all the shit woman went through, they tried 9 times to postpone the first trial, the defense team. And each time she's, nope, you're in my courtroom. This is the way we all play the game. She didn't care who you were. She didn't care what you did. You're all on the same level. And she gave no shits. And she's great.
It takes a judge like that too, to not get snowed by Scientology because of the way they play. She was amazing.
Yeah, she was so great. And because the first trial ended in a deadlock, they couldn't come to a thing. And we could go into the jury foreman, but I choose not to. That's a topic for another day. Yeah. But it ended up being a hung jury. And the DA decided that, yes, we're going to do this. We're going to do it again. And they brought it to trial in 2023, in spring of 2023. And in that trial of spring of 23, not only did we have the 3 same Jane Does, they were allowed to talk about how he drugged them, how in one of the situations he held a loaded gun to one of their heads to tell her to shut the F up during the attack. And so we have that aspect. We also have the aspect of Scientology. Claire Headley was also on Scientology in the aftermath. She appeared with her husband, Mark Headley. They did an episode. Mark has also written a book, and they both have a YouTube channel, Blown for Good, Behind the Iron Curtain of Scientology, I think is Mark's name, book's name. Anyway, Claire Headley was a high executive in the Church of Scientology. And if you wanted to know about Scientology policy and the nitty gritty from someone who has been a part of Scientology since the age of 5, Claire Headley is the person that you'd want to talk to. She worked very closely with the heads of Scientology, David and Shelley Miscavige, hashtag where Shelley, but also she knows the policy. And there is, policy can't be changed. It was written by L. Ron Hubbard. It is by L. Ron Hubbard. You do not change policy. So policy about how we do things is written down and you keep track of it. And so Claire Headley would tell you exactly what these women were treated as, how those reports that they brought in, how they would be treated and handled, how they would be treated and handling Danny in this instance. And she brought up a really good thing, which was in Scientology, there's a thing called the tone scale. And in the tone scale, it talks about where you are in relationship to death. Is that correct, Doug?
I mean, it goes all the way below body death, all the way up to serenity of beingness. It's a whole can of worms to open up that tone scale, but you got the basic idea.
So if we, as lay people, know body death is pretty, like, bad, right? Being dead's bad, right?
Yes.
Where do they find victims on the tone scale, according to where death is?
I don't know. You probably would know. Isn't that it, they have one where anybody like Dave, anybody that's gay, for example, is 1-1, which is the most evil tone scale you can be on. So just by the fact of being gay, you're supposed to look at someone as being a backstabber, a liar, two-faced. It's this chart, this tone scale that she's talking about has a whole chart where we get programmed. Place people on their chronic tone. So if someone's regularly angry, that's their chronic tone. Just by the nature of being gay, for example, you're at 1, and anger would be 1.5. Below that is 1.1, which is the worst tone scale according to the bigamist, misogynist, and every other ist, Hubbard, the cult leader. That's the worst thing you can be at. And then there is a section, Mandy, below that. I don't know what number it would be, called victim, But the main one that we focused on was that one. That's what, that was the suppressive person. That's the person that's probably causing the aforementioned accidents and illnesses in your life. And that's the person that you need to get rid of the most. The whole thing's completely arbitrary. It's a mind control tool. And it's actually pretty clever if you deep dive on it. Just how important that tone scale is to Scientologists in general. It helps to shut down their emotions and make them into secondary sociopaths like Danny, if they're not already one. And it's just it's a whole huge manipulation tool that's key to the cult.
So knowing and being taught that victim is on almost the same level as being dead.
Yeah. And you should never be a victim in Scientology. There's no such things.
There's not a victim.
No, you're always at cause, as they say.
Right. So you were taught that if this stuff happens to you, and regardless of how you feel, that this is a violation, that somebody hurt you. And if you haven't been a victim of SA or rape or something so violent like that, there's a part of your soul that is no longer the same.
Yeah.
And having that being told, that feeling that is no longer the same or is whole, is your fault, one. And it is so bad that you wish you were dead, that everybody else sees you as that. And that is Claire Headley's testimony, was what they did, how they would handle it, and how these women would be told that you, the only thing worse is body death.
Yeah.
By what you're going through. And you cannot be a victim. Yeah. Stand up, put a smile on your face, act normal because everything's normal. Go to ethics, admit your sins and what you did to bring this in, and pay us thousands and thousands of dollars until you are correct and you no longer feel that way, because it is your fault. You feel that way because you did something to have him do that to you. Wrap your mind around them.
Wow. I mean, I live that, and I'm just getting blown away listening to you talk about it again. That's actually how I used to think, and it made so much sense, Mandy, when I was in it, because one of the major things was you always want to be at, they offer you superpowers, and anything that happens, you don't have to be a victim of random life circumstances. You can be at cause over everything, and that's the goal that you're going for that's set at the top of that bridge. So it's a clever way that whenever you feel like a victim, which is the worst thing you can be in Scientology, because it almost says the tech, that's their stupid word for their brainwashing. That means the tech, if it doesn't work, or if something bad happened to you, no matter what happens in your life, because the basic idea is you're always at cause and there's no such things as victims, you could see how that manipulation could get the church thousands of dollars for fixing things that are theirs or other people's faults, while you have this burden stacked onto you year after year about how bad you are. And what do you think that does to someone's self-esteem in Scientology while they think that they're becoming more powerful and free? It's the ultimate mind fuck just listening to you, man. Brings back some memories.
Thank you. The second thing I wanted to touch on with the second trial was a blind witness. A blind witness is brought in to talk about the topic that they know. They don't know anything about the trial. They're not given information about the trial. And so they're brought in about, the psychologist,
which was another great witness, by the way, that explained it perfectly, but please go ahead. Yes.
Dr. Ziv is a forensic psychologist. She was a witness in the Harvey Weinstein case, and she was brought in to talk about one thing, the non-intuitive behaviors post-attack on part of victims of SA and rape. That is the only thing she was allowed to talk about and the only thing she was allowed to be questioned about. She wasn't questioned about, how do you feel about what happened to Jane Doe 1 or in Jane Doe 2? She was not there to be questioned about that. She was there to bring her knowledge of that and to be questioned about that. And so that was part of the evidence that the prosecutors brought into the case. She talked about SA myths in society and how victims of SA could or should and do react in the moment and after, and how as a society we have this idea of how a victim of SA should act. And if they don't fit those criteria, then in our brain as society members, they either were or not. There's not a gray area. and how not just society believes those myths, but the victims do as well. And so if I'm not telling the story how you think I should be, then maybe I am lying, because it's another mindfuck of how we perceive victims of SA and what those SA victims should or should not be telling us or should not be telling other people.
Or themselves, yeah.
Yeah.
So the psychologist was brought in, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She talks about how in movies and TV shows, someone who is a victim of SA, it's usually somebody who jumps out of the bushes or holds a knife to your throat or gun, or they're lurking in your closet and they come out and attack you. And that is not the way it happens. That is not how SA and rape happens. Do they? Yes, they do. But 99% of the time, it is not the bad man lurking in the shadows. It's not the guy coming out of your closet. It's your boyfriend. It's your significant other. It's someone you know in some way, and it's someone you trust that happens with. 15% of SA victims would physically fight back in the heat of a moment, but that is just with a stranger. 15% would fight against with a stranger, and it goes lower after you know that person.
Makes sense.
So you hear, you find all these stories of men and women fighting back against my boyfriend, or whatever. I never fought back about my ex-husband. I never once hit him. Never once. Because I was in that 15%. There was no way in hell I was going to fight back. If I fought back and nobody came to my rescue, I was going to get my ass kicked later. There's repercussions for fighting back.
Yeah, yeah.
And as victims, you're like inherently learn those, unfortunately. Yes, 95% of the time, a person will stay with their abuser. And it takes at least 7 times to leave your abusing or your abusing relationship. It takes at least 7 times. And that can be 7 times mentally or 7 times like physically. I'm making a plan, I'm going to leave. I can attest to that. I was at least 7 times before I moved in my car and slept in my car. And then she talked about testing the waters and how you, as a victim, if you go and you tell someone your story, you're testing the people that you're telling's reaction on what they need to know. So if I told you guys about my story and I didn't know you guys, I would tell you the bare basics until you ask questions about more. And then I'd give you more information. And so as you tell your story more, you give more details or you tell different things because you can, those people can trust, you can trust those people with those situations. And that was a big thing for the defense in both cases that, oh, you told these police in this interview this thing. And then 5 years later, when they re-interviewed you, you told them this. So is it a false memory? What is it? And she brought up that, no, it wasn't a false memory. They've always had those memories. They finally felt comfortable sharing that part of their stuff. And that goes back to the myth. We think that you should lay it all on the table. You should tell everybody all of this stuff, the nitty gritty, for stuff that you wouldn't even tell your doctor. You're supposed to tell a stranger? You're supposed to tell a cop? No, that's not the way it happens. And so as you go forward and tell these things that happen with other people that you become comfortable with, then you would tell more detail or tell more of your story because you trust those people now and you trust them with your story.
I don't think that people realize, especially when it comes to if there's going to be a rape test done, it's really collecting evidence is what it is. But it's another form of violation. You're having to now undress in front of a stranger. You're telling deep, dark things. It's so easy to just shut down. It's so easy to try to just pretend it didn't happen because there is no safe place after that. You have everyone inside your bubble. And I've been through it, and it's devastating.
The society's norms of what we would think that in your situation, David, that why wouldn't he tell us after we performed a rape kit? Why wouldn't he tell us everything he knows? Are you kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me? He can't. He just violated him in a totally different way that his body and mind cannot comprehend. He's going to remember things 6 weeks down the road that he finally feels comfortable telling you. And when you have just the act of that happening, those things happening to those women, and knowing that from Dr. Ziv that you're testing the waters of stuff, but then you have the complication of Scientology on top of it telling you that it's your fault, it is no surprise that these women, when they finally got out, took years to realize that this was a violation and a crime, and that it was okay to go to the police. And in going and leaving the church, they lost everything. Their jobs, homes, some of them had to move. And because of the fact that they were speaking against a member of the church in a bad, negative light, they became suppressive people in the eyes of the church, which opened them up to fair game. And fair game is where you go, and L. Ron Hubbard talks about destroying them utterly. You can lie to them, you can hurt them, you can do whatever the hell, because we have the best knowledge available and we're better than them. And if they're attacking us, our members, or our church, we have the right to attack them with PIs, harassment, and that's what the civil lawsuit is going on currently with Danny Masterson and the Three Dangos. It is about the harassment that they have endured because of coming forward. And that's a totally different, that's a civil trial. That's a totally different thing. And that was not brought up in any of the criminal trial. That was not allowed to be brought up because it was part of an ongoing case and you cannot, it was just not allowed. And so these women have endured so much more than we realize, And the fact that not only did they come forward and they had people believe them, and I'm not just talking about Leah because she's a celebrity, but Leah as a person, Mike Linder as a person, they had these little things. And the most interesting thing is they finally got their justice.
Mandy, just personally, thank you so much for sharing. That was super articulate. If anybody's listening that's in a situation like that, that would have definitely affected me. That was really powerful.
Thank you all for joining us for today's episode. I know we talk about hard things, and on top of those hard things in the beginning of the episode, we had mentioned the loss of a friend that did amazing work for survivors. We're going to take a few minutes and honor Doug's. Mandy, I'm so honored that I got to have at least one sit-down meeting with Doug. I know this is hard for you, but I am going to let you take over and let's talk about Doug.
He is definitely missed by a lot of people. If you were not familiar with Doug Scott Kramer and his YouTube channel, Dazed But Not Confused, you missed out on someone who cared deeply about his guests that he had on, the topics that he covered, and the lives of the people that he came in contact with. He had guests on from all walks of life and covered all sorts of topics. There was not a person that he had on that he didn't consider a friend. He definitely had his opinions and was not shy of those opinions, but he was always someone that would speak the truth. He was someone that would listen to ideas and support those ideas of friends. He was truly someone that supported victims and wanted to get their stories out, because he felt every voice needed to be heard. He definitely had a story, and he shared that with all of us. And I feel that every light burns bright, and when that light is gone, it is definitely missed. And I feel that Doug didn't realize how many people he touched and how many people he supported and how important people found him. And I just hope that now that he's in a place of peace and can see how much he mattered to people. I will say that when I found out the news that he passed, it was very hard and very unexpected. He died of natural causes, and it was just a sudden thing that happened. And so when people found out, we were very shocked and surprised, and felt like, for me, it felt like a part of me was gone and was very, very lonely for what he brought to my life. I'm very grateful that he did this episode, and he had covered many episodes of the Danny Masterson trial. And when I came to him and told him my perspective about this episode and what I wanted to do with David, he was 100% behind it. So he is definitely someone whose voice mattered. He let victims know that they mattered and that they were supported.
This is the episode that took me the longest to edit. I had to take a break every 15 minutes because I didn't start editing it until after we got the news that he had passed. I would watch him talk or watch him listen, and the things that he did say, and especially when it got sentimental to us and personal to us, it was the fucking truth. It wasn't because we were recording. It wasn't for clout. It was the truth. What he gave to the survivor community while he was here as an advocate, what he will continue to give to the survivor community even after him being gone, is what I dream of. He's an inspiration. He offered for me to be on his show. It didn't get to happen, but I will always hold dear to me that it would have happened. And that is such an honor.
Yep.
I know that the topic in the episode we covered is hard enough, and it definitely hits home to so many of us.
Mm-hmm.
That double-edged sword with the sentiment is that time caught on tape with me and Doug is going to be forever in the universe.
Yep.
And I'm proud of it. Doug lived one hell of a life. He's such an inspiration because he took the shit and he made it into something powerful and amazing. What has given me some solace with this is it's in recording of Doug saying, I have to make a difference. I have to make a change. And when I heard him say that, editing the episode after finding his passing, I was like, you know what? He did it. And it's going to live on. And that is what I'm taking with me.
As you watch his episodes, you get to know him more and more. You didn't have to be a personal friend of his to know who he was. He was that person. And I will always miss my friend.
Rest in peace, Mr. Doug Scott Kramer, and thank you for the impact that you've had on me and the survivor community.